That concludes our broadcast of the emergency services meeting today on a glorious Thursday afternoon. It's 11 and a half minutes after 12 o'clock. I'm not good at estimating, but looked like maybe a couple hundred people just marched in front of the KMXT building down the hill on the Black Lives Matter march. Nice day for that. We wish them all the very best. Thanks for tuning in. This is Public Radio KMXT Kodiak 100.1 FM, live on the web at kmxt.org. It's time to do some local news.
Support for KMXT's Midday Report is provided by Artinger's Fine Furnishings, featuring children's clothing from the Tea Collection, home spa items from Crabtree and Evelyn, and leather handbags by Dooney and Burke. Special orders of the Tea Collection clothing in your child's size always welcome at Artinger's. 486-5554.
Thursday's Kodiak Island Borough Assembly regular meeting tonight will vote on some significant budget items, including raising the property tax rate and reinstating over $1 million in public school funding. But before these items are addressed, the Assembly first needs to pass a budget. Jared Griffin with KMXT News has this preview of tonight's meeting.
Several budgets have been mulled by the Assembly in recent weeks. Borough Manager Michael Powers' budget, Assemblymember Rebecca Skinner's budget, Assemblymember Julie Kavanaugh's budget, and a budget prepared by Assemblymembers Scott Arndt and James Turner. While the manager's budget has been the focus of much discussion as it relates to balancing the budget, including an 18% raise to the property mill rate, last week Assemblymember Skinner and, together, Arndt and Turner prepared their own budgets for consideration with varying degrees of consultation with the borough manager and his staff. The Arndt and Turner budget was summarily criticized by the borough staff for oversights, not conforming to general accepted accounting practices, and for not consulting with the borough manager and staff. The Skinner budget features more cuts to operating costs and replacement and renewal, or R&R, transfers, and maintains a $1 million cut to local funding to the Kodiak Island Borough School District and zero funding for Kodiak College. Skinner notes in her memo to her budget that she believes, quote, "We will be able to use CARES Act money to support Kodiak College with expenses related to COVID-19 and help offset extra costs the school district will incur to respond to COVID-19, unquote. The proposed budget also preserves the current 10.75 mill rate by adjusting the mill rate of different funds and transferring funds from other areas, such as the R&R fund balance, to help pay for debt services. If the borough budget is passed as proposed, then there will be no need to raise area-wide property taxes. Still on the agenda, though, is apportioning the mill rate to fund a balanced budget. Similar to the multiple versions of the budget the Assembly has considered, the Assembly will be presented with different options. While Assemblymember Skinner has proposed a flat 10.75 mill rate, Assemblymember Julie Kavanaugh is proposing a total area-wide mill rate of 12.25, and the borough is proposing a 12.43 rate to reflect budgets that maintain an R&R fund balance. The Assembly will then discuss a motion by Assemblymembers Arndt and Turner to reconsider the $1 million cut to public education funding. The borough meeting will begin at 6:30 p.m. at the Borough Assembly Chambers and will take public comment on these and other items. For KMXT News, I'm Jared Griffin.
Kodiak residents wishing to make public comment at the Assembly Chamber should note that the borough building will be completely open to the public with no requirements for masks and no restrictions on social distancing and other CDC recommendations on COVID-19 precautions. You can also listen to the meeting right here on KMXT and comment telephonically. State leaders say travelers to Alaska who take a test before or after their arrival or upon their arrival should take a second test 7 to 14 days later. That change is under the revised state mandate that goes into effect tomorrow. It says those coming into the state should minimize their contact with others until they have the results from the second test. Alaska Chief Medical Officer Dr. Ann Zink said taking one test isn't the equivalent of the 14-day self-quarantine that the state has required since late March.
We're really trying to minimize that risk as much as possible to Alaskans while opening up as much as we can.
Travelers will be given a voucher they can use at certain testing sites. Zink said the state is working to identify which sites will take the vouchers. Governor Mike Dunleavy said the state is relying on people to work together to minimize the spread of the virus.
We have a duty, I should say, to each other to try and not impact each other with this virus if we can.
Under the revised mandate, out-of-state travelers can choose between two alternatives to a 14-day quarantine. One, either have a negative test result from a test taken within 72 hours of flying, or two, combine a negative test result from a test taken within 5 days before flying with a second test on arrival. Travelers without a test can get a test on arrival, but they must self-quarantine until they have the results. When asked whether he would consider mandating the use of face masks in places where social distancing is difficult, Dunleavy said the state will continue to rely on Alaskans to do the right thing.
The big thing I would ask when it comes to masks is simply this. If you see somebody wearing a mask and you don't want to wear a mask, just give them a thumbs up. If you see somebody not wearing a mask and you're wearing a mask, they're your fellow Alaskan. And nobody's trying to hurt each other. We're all trying to do the right thing in a very difficult situation.
I believe you said the mask wearing is about protecting others, and that people who don't know the health conditions of other people, they encounter. City of Unalaska has confirmed its first local cases of COVID-19. Two seafood industry workers tested positive for the virus on Wednesday. The two men work at Icicle Seafoods and have been in quarantine since arriving in Unalaska 7 days ago, says City Manager Aaron Reinders.
The plans that Icicle had in place is that they were tested in Seattle prior to traveling to Unalaska. So at that point, their test results were negative. Then at the 7 day point in that quarantine, then you get a second round of testing. And then a positive test results occurred today.
She says neither have symptoms and both were immediately moved to isolation in Unalaska after they tested positive for the virus. In a written statement, Chris Pugmire, Icicle's manager of operations for Western Alaska, said the company implemented its cleaning and sanitation protocols. He said that although the company has been testing all employees before they get to Unalaska, they are prepared to handle a positive case. Reinders said the local clinic has been working with the State Department of Health and Social Services on contact tracing and with Icicle to make sure both men who tested positive are getting appropriate care.
We don't anticipate at this point to be raising our risk level here locally because, you know, these are identifiable cases. We're able to keep these individuals isolated and our clinic is able to still maintain a standard of care for the community as a whole.
The state's public health team will contact people who have been in contact with the two men. Unalaska is the largest community in Alaska without a critical access hospital. The nearest emergency room is almost 1,000 miles away in Anchorage. Alutlik Family and Health Services, the island's only health care facility, serves anywhere from 10 to 15,000 year-round residents and seasonal workers. Clinic officials say the positive cases were identified as part of the employer's testing protocols and that the clinic is prepared to handle cases of COVID-19. In partnership with the city and fish processors, the clinic created an isolation and quarantine facility for those infected with COVID-19 and began local rapid testing in April. As of Wednesday, 194 people had been tested. Took a total of 4 aircraft from Coast Guard Air Station Kodiak to medevac an injured fisherman off the fishing vessel Baranov on Monday. The reason? The vast distances the aircraft had to travel to reach him. Coast Guard reports that 2 C-130J Hercules aircraft and 2 MH-60 helicopter crews coordinated efforts to perform a long-range medevac for the 31-year-old fisherman. The 196-foot vessel Baranov was approximately 300 miles northwest of St. Paul Island at the time. The man was safely transferred to awaiting emergency medical services personnel in St. Paul, who further transported him to Anchorage for treatment. The rescue began in the early morning hours Monday when District 17 Command Center watchstanders received a call requesting a medevac for the injured fisherman. That was at approximately 1 a.m. An MH-60 Jayhawk crew successfully hoisted the man at approximately 5:47 p.m., nearly 17 hours later. Collectively, the 4 air crews flew over 30 hours, covering approximately 1,900 miles, according to a Coast Guard press release. One of the pilots in the case, Lieutenant Matthew Chase, said the C-130J's ability to refuel other aircraft is unique. Another pilot, Lieutenant Steve Podmore, who flew one of the helicopters, said long-range rescues such as this require an all-hands effort, careful consideration, and detailed planning. In this case, Podmore said, the success of the air crew that completed the hoist was made possible by the multiple air crews that ferried aircraft, provided coverage, coordinated refueling and ramp space, and maintained communications between the crews and personnel at Air Station Kodiak. Good weather also contributed to the mission's success. Weather on scene was 5-mile-an-hour winds in 8-foot seas and roughly 10 miles of visibility. Kodiak's second case of COVID-19 was announced Wednesday morning. Public health nurse Elsa DeHart, who's a member of the city's emergency operations team, said everybody, including the patient, handled the case correctly.
We had a traveler come to Kodiak hoping to spend the summer, a great adventure here, fishing, and did all the right things, wore their mask, went to quarantine straight from the, you know, as soon as they got here, went and got tested the next day per the mandates and was tested positive. So it was an asymptomatic case and went straight to isolation. So everybody did everything right and it really went pretty smoothly. But yes, we do have a case here.
The state health mandate that requires a 14-day quarantine for people who arrive from out of state is set to expire tomorrow, have been changed as of last night. Even Jones, a doctor at Kodiak Area Native Association, said it is too early to be lifting quarantine requirements.
I do think that's a little bit premature when we have a lot of people traveling in at this point. It's the best way to protect the citizens of Alaska is to say, hey, you need to hunker down for a couple weeks. And an alternative could be that you come in and you quarantine for a week and then get tested.
The 72-hour requirement that might not even be useful, he says, as some tests need about 72 hours to come back from the lab anyway. Right now, Canada has a large capacity for testing, Jones says. There will soon be 5 testing machines up and running, as well as a large number of testing cartridges. And while there isn't capacity to test everyone in the community, Kodiak doctors encourage anyone with symptoms to contact any of the medical providers in town to get tested.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Getting more fish to Alaskans and the needy. More on Alaskans' Own after this.
Grundins urges everyone to buy seafood directly from community-supported fisheries at localcatch.org. Grundins, supporting fisheries around the world since 1926.
Alaskans' Own, the state's first ever community-supported fishery, is celebrating 11 years of its subscription service to seafood lovers.
A community-supported fisheries project relies on forward funding from subscribers who pay in the beginning of the season and then receive fish on a regular basis.
Linda Bankin is director of the Alaska Longline Fishermen's Association in Sitka. Up to 80 local boats supply a mix of salmon, halibut, rockfish, and more to the CSF.
And the idea behind it is that consumers are getting to support the small-scale community-based fishermen. They're bringing them highest quality product, and we're keeping more of that great Alaska seafood in Alaska.
Just 1% of Alaska's billions of pounds of seafood remains in state. And while many of their nearly 300 subscribers are from the lower 48, Bankin says Alaska residents make up a good chunk of supporters. Subscribers also get seafood cooking lessons via Zoom.
A lot of people, I think, still are daunted by cooking seafood at home. So after they get their fish, we'll have a chef who will, through Zoom, make dinner with them.
All CSF proceeds fund ALFA's Fisheries Conservation Network, in which fishermen and scientists partner on projects like mapping bycatch hotspots, testing electronic monitoring, and strategies to avoid longline predation by sperm whales. Shortly after the coronavirus hit, Alaskans' Own also started working with the Seafood Producers Cooperative and Sitka Sound Seafoods to donate fish weekly to needy families.
And we've set up a system where people can contribute to support the cost of processing, the cost of delivery. The fish is donated.
Over 800 pounds have been delivered so far, and Benkin says donations will continue into the fall. Find links at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by Ocean Beauty Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
You got a long baby bumper coming up, so I'm going to do this quickly. It's 51 degrees out here at the airport, 57 degrees here on Signal Hill, 74% humidity, an east wind of 6 miles, 8 miles an hour blowing with 10 miles visibility. Says it's going to be cloudy today with a high near 55, north winds 5 miles an hour becoming calm. Isolated showers between 11 and 2 tonight with cloudy skies, low around 46. Light and variable winds become northwest 5 to 10 after midnight. 20% chance of rain, mostly sunny again tomorrow. High near 60 with west winds about 5 miles an hour. Chiniac Bay this afternoon, variable winds of 10 with 3-foot seas, variable less than 10 becoming northwest 10 after midnight, 2-foot seas, variable less than 10 becoming southwest 10 in the afternoon tomorrow, seas of 2 feet. Marmot Bay, variable less than 10, 3-foot seas this afternoon, west 10, 2-foot seas tonight, west 10 in the morning becoming variable less than 10, seas of 3 feet tomorrow. It's the 4th of June, 5:15 was when the sun came up, goes down at 11:03, 17 hours and 48 minutes of daylight time, 2 minutes and 18 seconds of daylight gain. The next tide in the Kodiak District's at 2:08 this afternoon, 7.2 feet. The low tide tonight is at 7:27, 1.4 feet. On the west side, the Uganic tide is high at 2:28 in the afternoon, 14.7 feet. In the evening, low tide's at 8:16. 0.93 feet. Weir counts, where it keeps going up. The Litnick count went through the weir yesterday, 229 sockeye for a total of 960 this year. 51 sockeye went up to Buskin for a grand total of 167. Nothing into Lake Louise as of yet. As you heard from Jared earlier, there's a borough assembly meeting tonight beginning at 6:30. We'll broadcast the meeting live. You can go on their website for further information. And the Bayside Fire Department is about to begin their Summer Fire Recruiting Academy Monday night. It's a 40-hour course teaching the fundamentals of firefighting. Meetings are at 7 o'clock at the station near Abercrombie Park. If you're interested, stop by the Bayside Fire Department and pick up an application.
Support for KMXT comes from GCI. GCI has adjusted store hours across the state to keep our customers and employees as safe as possible during this time. The most up-to-date store hours are available on GCI.com.